103.8.
Simon Marks joins us on the line from Washington, D.C. Simon, normally talk to you on a Monday. It's a Tuesday. Hopefully we're not too late. Good to have you on.
As I said on Twitter, Tim, a day late but never a dollar short.
I tell you, that's a great phrase. I'm just going to make a quick note of that, if that's all right with you. Nice to talk to you. Look, I wanted to ask you about Sally Yates, former career prosecutor at the Department of Justice, served as acting attorney general during the very early days of President Trump, testifying, talking about a man called Flynn, Simon.
Yes, I mean, talking about a couple of different things, both her approach to President Trump's attempted travel ban, which of course got her fired by President Trump in her position as acting Attorney General while President Trump was waiting for the man who became Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, to be confirmed in office by the U.S. Senate. But the major headlines that she made here were with regard to General Michael Flynn, President Trump's ousted National Security Advisor, the man who was fired from his job about 3 weeks into the Trump administration because he had lied to Vice President Mike Pence about the nature of conversations that he, General Flynn, had had before he became National Security Advisor with the Russian ambassador to the United States, and also because we now know that he had accepted Russian government money as payment for his decision to attend a gala honoring an anniversary for the Russian propaganda television channel RT, a gala at which he sat next to the Russian President Vladimir Putin. So Michael Flynn is absolutely the fulcrum of the conversation that is going on here and is not ending, and it's a conversation that Donald Trump cannot escape about whether there was alleged collusion between members of the Trump campaign team during last year's presidential election and the Russian government. And as much as Donald Trump, and if you look at his Twitter feed, you can see this, as much as he wants to change the conversation, Sally Yates yesterday revealed that she warned the White House that Michael Flynn was at risk of being blackmailed by the Russians because of what she tantalizingly referred to as his underlying conduct. We don't exactly know what that phrase means, but that he was a blackmail risk, and yet for 18 days after the White House was given that information by the acting Attorney General, Michael Flynn was still in his post, was still attending classified meetings, was still participating in all the facets of the job that the National Security Advisor should undertake. It has never been explained by the White House, by Sean Spicer, the White House press secretary, nor by Donald Trump himself, why you would keep on a national security advisor for fully 2.5 weeks after you've been told that he was at risk of being blackmailed by the Russians. That is the question that the White House either cannot answer or will not answer. One way or another, they have not answered it, and it is the question that is going to be asked of them again and again and again until they explain it.
And one of the British broadsheets have likened this to a paperback thriller if it wasn't true or serious. But Sally Yates wasn't just talking about that. Yesterday she was speaking about the travel ban, and she's reiterated her point of view that this was unconstitutional.
Yes, absolutely. And it was, of course, her refusal to go along with this travel ban that led Donald Trump to fire her, although there are those who believe that perhaps the die was cast for that the moment she walked through the doors of the White House and said, look, we've got evidence to suggest that Michael Flynn hasn't been truthful and is now at risk of being blackmailed by the Russians. But on the face of it, it was her opposition to President Trump's attempt to introduce a ban on travel into the United States by all refugees and by the citizens of 7 predominantly Muslim Islamic countries that led to her firing as acting Attorney General. And Sally Yates said during her testimony yesterday that for her it was an absolutely clean-cut constitutional issue. She simply believed, as indeed the courts have so far believed, that the motivation behind Donald Trump's executive order was not that he had clear information of a national security risk posed by the citizens of those seven countries that his initial travel ban targeted, but that actually he was going after people based on faith, and that that is an unconstitutional position to take. Republicans on the panel questioning Sally Yates yesterday hit back at that. Ted Cruz of Texas particularly insisting that the President of the United States has broad latitude to set immigration policies, but Sally Yates held absolutely firm, said that she took the view that the President of the United States was acting in an unconstitutional manner, and while this issue is still being litigated in courts across the country, as you know, of course, the travel ban is not in place because Donald Trump keeps losing in court.
Simon, this is interesting. This was a question posed to Sean Spicer. Why on President Trump's website the phrase and the whole paragraph, actually, preventing Muslim immigration was there. That is now no longer there.
Yes. And I, you know, we don't know the answer to that, but I can't imagine that that is a coincidence, because the removal of that paragraph, of that stated aim of U.S. government policy, coincided with a fresh legal round that's now taking place just south of us in Washington, in Virginia, where another judge is taking a look at President Trump's revised travel ban. He wants now to close the borders to citizens from six countries. He's taken Iraq out of the original list. The problem for the president is that on so many occasions during the campaign, as you recall, of course, and even since the campaign, since he became president, he has characterized this as a ban rooted in a desire to try and keep the country safe from what he always refers to as radical Islamic terrorism. So his own words have become the rope with which the executive order is hanging itself in a way, even though the executive order doesn't characterize things in those terms. Judges and lawyers keep looking at it and keep saying, yeah, but whatever the executive order says, it's absolutely clear what the president's intent was. And so this decision suddenly to scrub that language from the website may be related to a desire on the part of government lawyers to say, well, that wasn't the intent, and you know, that language is now disappearing from the rhetoric that Trump officials use. Of course, that doesn't mean it's going to disappear from Donald Trump's Twitter feed anytime soon.
Isn't that the truth? Final story, Simon. I know this is something you've been considering. Former President Barack Obama speaking out on climate change. This is as the White House contemplates the future of participation by the United States in the Paris Accords. Tell us about this.
Yes, well, I mean, the first point to make is that Barack Obama is back. He's back from holiday. Sure. He's made several appearances in the last week or so. The first time he was talking about inner-city youth, at-risk youth across the United States. Then he suddenly put out a video endorsing Emmanuel Macron as the next French president, and the Obama team will clearly be very happy about the way that election ended up. And now he's made this speech about climate change and about the importance of the United States honoring the commitments that he made and his team negotiated in Paris at that big climate change conference. The Trump administration takes a very different view on climate change. The Environmental Protection Agency is now headed by a man who is a climate change skeptic, doesn't believe that global warming is the result of human behavior. And yet the Trump administration tantalizingly has not told us whether they are going to honor the commitments that Barack Obama made in Paris. We are supposed to hear from them literally any day. I mean, any hour. We should get a sense of whether Donald Trump is going to issue a directive killing America's participation in the Paris Accords or whether he's going to go along with it. One would have to say, based on the evidence of his appointment so far, that he certainly seems to be a climate change skeptic, and he's no friend of international agreements either, as free trade fans will already have noted. But let's see what he does with regards to Paris.
Final thought, Simon, just very briefly, you made the point there, and it really does seem as though Barack Obama is back. He is kind of back in town, as it were. Any thoughts on what he may be doing next? Is there any firm direction, well, aside from the book deals, of course?
You know, well, aside from the book deals, which are substantial, I mean, first of all, he is said to be very nervous about the notion of directly challenging President Trump day after day, and in any sense acting as a kind of leader of the opposition, that he believes America only has one president at a time, and right now, whether you like him or loathe him, it's President Donald Trump, and he should be given the oxygen to lead the country that George W. Bush, for example, gave Barack Obama when he became president of the United States. On the other hand, the Democrats are leaderless. I mean, yes, they've got Senator Charles Schumer and Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi up on Capitol Hill, but these people are not national leaders who are capable of going head-to-head with Donald Trump every single day. Barack Obama will want to play a role in trying to determine who heads the Democratic Party going into the next presidential election cycle, but many Democrats around the country are craving leadership, given what they would argue are some of the extreme measures that Donald Trump espouses and has been taking in a number of different areas. So Barack Obama finds himself in this very interesting position. He's being pressured by some Democrats to get down in the mud and to get much more dirty in terms of the daily debate here. And yet, he also has reverence for the constitutional niceties that say the last president doesn't rain on this one's parade. So how that pans out, I think, is going to be interesting to see, both from the perspective of Donald Trump, but also from the perspective of Barack Obama personally.
Simon Marks can be found in Washington, D.C., I believe, on two motorized wheels on occasion, Simon. Is that correct?
I can. That's very true, Tim. Very true.
Thank you very much.
I was on them this morning.
Do you go for the Fishtail Park, or do you take the Quadrophenia approach to this?
Interestingly enough, today, for the first time in several weeks, as I was sailing down Connecticut Avenue, for the uninitiated, I have an all-electric sort of motorcycle thing. Yes. And as I was sailing down Connecticut Avenue at 28 miles per hour, which is its maximum speed, a taxi driver pulled up alongside me and said, "Is that all electric?" And I said, "Yes, it is." Very impressed.
As you sailed avec nonchalance down Connecticut.
Sailed avec nonchalance at 28 miles an hour.
Oh, there is an image of Simon Marks. Good to talk to you, Simon. Appreciate it.